All right. Good morning. I want to welcome you to Mount Olive Church. And I know there's long weekends like this, a lot of visitors and family that are here. And so if you're brand new with us, we want to welcome you. We're in a series on Ecclesiastes. We're kind of jumping in the middle if this is your first time with us. So hopefully it will make sense for you even as we're jumping in the middle of this series for you. March 15th, 2020 is a day that is burned into my mind because it was on this day when my life changed drastically. And I don't know all of you, because some of you are visitors, but it's also a day your life changed drastically. And I know that about you, even though we've never maybe met. It was on this day that I remember anyways, maybe my memory's not all correct, but that schools were closed down for what we thought was 1 or 2 weeks, maybe at most 4 weeks. I think no one really predicted that this thing was gonna last for months and months and months and years. But that is what ended up happening. And suddenly, because of COVID-19, our lives changed drastically. And our ability to do life, to work, to connect with others changed drastically as well. Now, I didn't bring that up for PTSD reasons. Some of you are like starting to get the shakes already. Is this guy a prophet? No, I'm not doing any prophecy right now, okay? But what's interesting is just 3 years after that in 2023, the World Health Organization declared another global health threat. And this was on the heels of the Surgeon General of the United States declaring an epidemic in the U.S. This epidemic and health threat did not catch the same publicity as COVID-19, but it has had devastating and destructive effects for all of us. What is this public health threat? What is this epidemic according to what the U.S. Surgeon General declared? It's loneliness. Loneliness. It's been said that 58% of Americans, American adults, describe themselves as being or feeling lonely. I'm sure it's no different in Canada. It's been said that loneliness is the number one biggest issue facing Americans today. This has contributed to, obviously, mental health struggles that we have, contributed to anxiety and depression. But according to the U.S. General's statement, it affects our physical health in ways too. Here's some of the things that he lists. A lack of connections is results in a 29% increased risk of heart disease, a 32% increased risk of stroke, a 50% increased risk of developing dementia for older adults, and a 60% increased risk of premature death. One person noted that it affects our mortality rate more than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I'm not telling you to smoke 15 cigarettes a day, okay? Just so you know. But it has devastating effects on our health. Now, there is a little bit of noise coming from beside me here, and I'm not sure if that's what that's from. If there's a, I don't know, but sound guy will probably figure that out. It has devastating effects. Now, we could just chalk this up as, well, it's because of COVID and the social restrictions that were put on us as humanity, and that's why this has happened. But researchers will say, no. COVID and the restrictions that came most definitely expedited the problem of loneliness within our culture. But this was on the rise years before COVID ever happened. And it continues to be on the rise, even for us today. They point out, and I think there's some validity to this, two cultural values that we have that contribute to this idea of loneliness. And they have some value, but they have a strong Achilles heel. The two values of our culture that promote this as well is individualism and independence. And I'm not against all of individualism or all of independence. Individualism brings about some value in the sense that it lifts up the value of each individual person. We all have intrinsic value, and Scripture would reiterate that. Independence isn't all bad because it's good to take responsibility for your own life and not just rely on everyone around you for things, right? So there is some value to this, but taken to this extreme, these have a great deal present a great deal of problems for us. For example, individualism taken to the extreme, if you live for yourself, eventually you will be by yourself. And it takes the perspective that others are only there for my good. And so rather than collaborating or being collective, I will use people to get to the next step. Now, I may collaborate with people, but it's always for selfish reasons. That's what individualism is to the extreme. Think of the American dream, seen through the eyes of our individualistic culture. The American dream goes something like this, that every individual has the right to pursue prosperity and success and should have the opportunity to pursue prosperity and success for themselves. But how do we in an individualistic society define prosperity? We almost never use the word community or communal. We don't see someone who has a lot of friends and say, wow, they're prosperous. That's not how we think in an individualistic society. We almost always define prosperity and success in our society as what not what you have in community, but what you have accumulated. The things that you have done in a career or what you have gotten, whether that's money or stuff. And the results are in on our little experiment as North Americans, combining individualism with the American dream. We are one of the most lonely societies, not in the world today, in history. One of the most lonely societies in all of history. Bill McKibben had done some research dating back to the 1950s, looking at how many individuals the average American can call on in a crisis. Turns out that the number of individuals Americans can call on in a crisis, and I think this is North Americans, we're not much different than our brothers from the States and sisters from the States, has been declining since the 1950s. What's been increasing since the 1950s? The average square footage per individual in our homes. So it's interesting, we've traded friends for floor space. We've gotten rid of porches, which were always community in nature, for garage doors, which often shut out community. This isn't something we're gonna fix in like a day or one message here today, are we? But I think what we need to understand, this is the society we live in. How are we going to live? Because the results are in, and it's not great. As Johann Hari argued so well, I think, in his 2015 TED Talk, when he said the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, the opposite of addiction is connection. And we try to fight all our battles by individually getting healthy. But we don't get healthy individually. We weren't meant to do life individually. We were created for connection. I want to welcome you to our series on Ecclesiastes entitled Meaningless, where the teacher is walking through life under the sun, life in this world, he's very earthy. He's very practical. It's not just, hey, let's talk about philosophy or theology way out there. Let's talk about how does this apply right here in my life? And he looks at life under the heavens, under the sun, this temporal life we've been given, and he deconstructs all the wrong ways in which we're tempted to live life, and then reconstructs for us, here's the better way to live. And so he's going to do this in this whole area of loneliness and community. So if you have your Bibles, go to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 7. The teacher, there's an author for the book of Ecclesiastes who's writing this all down, but there's a teacher who's learned this all and is speaking this. And here's what the teacher teaches. He's a really wise guy. And he says this, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. The word meaningless is a Hebrew word, hevel. It means vanity or vapor. It's like smoke you try to grab, but you can never grab it. It slips through your fingers. It's short. It's transitory. It's like an enigma. You thought it was something, but then when you get there, it wasn't. This is what he's describing. Life under the heavens, he says, is hevel. It's not what you thought. You chase it, but you can't grab it. You can't control it. So here he says, I seen something else that's meaningless, that's hevel under the heavens. Now, what has he just come from? If you weren't here last week, Pastor Paris preached on injustice and oppression. And so this is where we've come from. And as it relates to this individualistic society and how we get to this individualism, I think as it relates to oppression and injustice, the teacher's already let us in on one of the driving forces for injustice in our world, which also leads to individualism and isolation, which is where he goes next. But what is this one driving force of all injustice and oppression? In verse 4 of chapter 4, he lets us in on this little secret. He says this, again, I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of the other. I want what you have. I want more than what you have. And so we're driven to get more, more, more. We're not content because someone has something that I want. And we look and the heart of desire is driven from this desire, comes from envy. And envy, often, you know, oppression and injustice sees people as stepping stones, right? I'm going to use you to get higher. And when envy captures our hearts, it leads to sin, which is always the abuse of others. And so he describes, this is where envy leads. And then he says, and here's where envy, if we were to live this out, put the individual above the other, live with self in mind over the other, use others as stepping stones to get higher, here's where it leads. Well, actually, you already know because, well, we live in the culture of where it leads, don't we? Here's what he says. I saw something else meaningless under the heavens. And then he describes it. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. He had nobody in his life. He goes on, there was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. In many ways, as we describe the American dream, he has made it, hasn't he? He has wealth, he has means, he has made it to the top of the financial and accumulation ladder. He has it all. But he's not content. He's not happy with what he has. Why? Because envy continues to drive him. And maybe his envy has driven out all the people in his life, which is injustice and oppression, right? But he's not content. He has lived for himself, and now he's all by himself. In many ways, he could be the rags to riches story that we all covet. He's made it. Listen to what he says. For whom am I toiling? He asked. And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is hevel. It's a miserable business. I chased the American dream. I chased wealth. I chased having more, more, more. And then when I got to the end, it was an enigma. I thought it was going to fill me and give me, and it has only stripped me. I can't even enjoy, and we're going to come back to this idea of enjoyment. Why? Because he's all by himself. He chased his dream and got his dream, and now his dream turned into his nightmare. This too is meaningless. It's a miserable business. You know, in some ways, what this man is describing, I think, is what we as a society are experiencing. He experienced it individually. We're experiencing it collectively. We are, in history of humanity, the wealthiest, have access to the most luxury of any other people group in the world, in the history of the world. Even if you're like, I work at a fast food joint and I live in a house with hot water and warm food and warm place to sleep, we live in other places and times and histories. It was only the elite and kings and queens that live like you and I live every single day of our lives. We have luxury at our fingertips, and yet we're one of the most lonely societies in the history of humanity. In many ways, what this man is experiencing, we have and are experiencing as a society. We are so lonely. But again, we have traded friends for floor space. We've chased a dream that we thought was going to fill us in an individualistic way, and it's left us empty. And the teacher is just describing for us, I think, what many of us would say, this is meaningless. This is a miserable business, this life of chasing. So what are we to do? Well, the teacher has deconstructed this pathway of life for us. What are we to do? Well, now he begins to reconstruct. He says, here's a better way to live. He says this, two are better than one. Two are better than one. You were not created to live individualistically. You were created at your very core, at your DNA, at your construction from nothing to something. You were created for community. In fact, when you go back to Genesis, when God created the world and he created humanity, at the very onset, relationship was already there. Look at what we're told in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Then God said, let us make mankind, humanity, in our image, in our likeness. Here's the reality. In an individualistic culture, we say everyone has individual value, intrinsic value. And the answer is yes, because each one of you individually were created in the very image and likeness of God. You are valuable. But as an individual, you lack the image of God. Notice what he says. Let me make mankind in my image. He does not. It's plural in Hebrew. The very nature of God himself is relationship. We serve one God, not a pantheon of God. We serve one God, and God is one, but he is one in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and he has perfect relationship in and of himself. And so at the very onset, if God has made us in his image, in his likeness, then none of us by ourselves actually represent the nature of God, but together we do. We were created for relationship. It's why after God created all the world and humanity, he kept saying, it's good, it's good, it's good. And then after God created Adam, the male, he said, it's not good. And all the women are like, yeah, we know. We agree, right? But it wasn't good because he was a man. Some of you are still debating that. It's not because he was a man. God says it's because he's alone. There's only one thing that was not right in the creation. It's after God created the male, and God said it's not good because the man is alone. So he created woman. My guess is if he would have created woman first, he would have said the same thing, but I'll leave that up to you. Some of you women are like, no, I think life's better alone. Anyways, but he created us for relationship to be together. It is in our DNA. It's why you can pursue the American dream by yourself, but it will never fulfill you. You cannot enjoy, we're going to talk about this more later, you cannot enjoy the things of life to the depth that they were meant to be enjoyed alone, because we were created to be together. That's why the teacher says two are better than one, and some of you are thinking, yeah, but that was just a really philosophical and theological answer. I'm a little lost right now, Pastor, but let me give you some hope. The teacher is not thinking in philosophical or theological terms at this point. I told you earlier, he's really earthy. He's extremely practical. So when he says two are better than one, he just says, let me give you some examples how two are better than one. And as you hear this, you're gonna be like, yeah, yeah, you're gonna find yourself nodding your head. He says this, two are better than one. Why? Because they have a good return for their labor. I bet at some point in your life, you faced a job, you faced a task, whether it was something you had to think through, something you had to plan, maybe it was a physical task, and in that moment, you became overwhelmed because you're like, I can't find my way to an answer in this. There is no way as I look at the job in front of me that I can accomplish this on my own, and you were filled with anxiety and worried, and then suddenly somebody or a bunch of somebodies showed up, right? And something you could not have done, it was overwhelming. You're like, I'm gonna be destroyed by this. Suddenly you were able to do it. Why? Because two are better than one. Two can get a lot more done than one can get done on their own. This has happened many times in my life. Often with technology, I'll hit a roadblock. It's like whether it's a software issue or a hardware issue, and I'm trying to figure out, I have done everything on my own. I Googled it by myself. I could not figure out this problem. And then finally, in humility, I phone my friend Andrew Fletcher. Like, Andrew, I can't figure this out. And within like minutes, because two are better than one. We need each other. We need each other. He goes on and says, oh, and actually, two are better than one, because if either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls down and has no one to help them up. Pity the one, that's like, it's a tragedy to do life alone, according to the teacher. Because we will all have falls in life. It may be a physical fall. It may be a spiritual fall, a moral or ethical fall. And when you have a moral or ethical fall, it is not helpful to have the moral uppity-ups come and stand over you and judge you. But what is helpful is to have someone enter your space and say, we will walk out of this together. You may have a financial fall that comes because of poor decision-making, or sometimes it's circumstances outside of your control. And sometimes you need someone to come alongside you and say, here's a wise pathway forward. I could not have figured that out on my own. Here is some financial assistance. I could not have done that on my own, because two are better than one. You know, one of the ways this has played out in my life is I can get melancholy sometimes, just a thing. I can give in to depression and despair. And I have a wife that comes alongside me when I'm falling. And I'll tell you this, in the moment, I do not like her advice. But she gives me perspective on life. Because when you look at life through a lens of negativity, it's just negative. But when you have two people together, someone can help you up, and someone can help you out. But it's a tragedy, according to the teacher, to do life alone. He goes on, also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one keep warm by themselves? I grew up in northern Alberta, high-level Alberta. It's like winter 9 months of the year there, I think. It's always cold, and we had this trailer with an addition to the trailer with a basement under the addition, and my brother and I, my brother is 6 years older than I, we shared a single bed in our addition. It was always cold in this room. Now, I was small for my age, so I was probably like 6 years old when we shared this bed. He would have been 12 years old, and he was big for his age. So the gap was probably closer to like 10 years, like a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old. But what my brother did, and this was so amazing, it was always freezing cold. I didn't want to go to bed, because you know when you get into bed and it's so freezing cold, you just don't want to get in. My brother would get into bed minutes before I did, and he would lay down on my side of the bed, and he would warm it up so that when I would come in, it would be nice and warm for me. Aw. Yeah. He was also a jerk, so because he was so much bigger than me, when he was sleeping, he would just take the whole bed, and I would be crunched into the corner, okay? So when he was conscious, he was nice. When he was unconscious, not so nice. That's just how it worked. But if two lie down together, how will they keep, or if one lies down, how will he keep warm? But two together, there is physical, but there is also emotional and relational warmth in life when we do life together. It's often my wife and I love to just travel. We'll go like nowhere significant, but just to get in the vehicle and drive. But there is this like emotional warmth of just being together when you're in a relationship, a healthy relationship that you were created for. I'll tell you what, sometimes when a relationship isn't healthy, it's a pretty cold drive. Doesn't matter how much we turn up the heat, it's just silent and cold the whole way, right? But there is warmth, relational warmth that comes. And this gives us the joy of life. We're going to talk about that more later. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. One of the more dangerous things that you could do in ancient times is do a road trip by yourself. Back then it was walking mostly. To go traveling alone was inviting robbers and bandits to come and attack you. But if you traveled even with just one other companion, that was a deterrent. Because two together could inflict some wounds, even if you'd still lose the battle, and all of a sudden the robbers and bandits are like, I don't think it's worth attacking that person. Let's wait for the single traveler. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. My guess is most of the times when you give into addiction, when you give into sin, it is often times when you are alone. But when you have someone beside you saying, hey, we can do this another way, two can defend themselves from temptation better than one. Two can defend themselves from an outside attack. I don't know, in my life, there have been seasons where I've been attacked. I don't know if there's anything that's better when you're in the middle of an attack, when someone outside of you comes beside you and fights for you. It is so empowering because two are better than one. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. And then he closes this section by saying, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Now, some have said maybe, you know, this is two people with God. It could be that. It could just be life in community has more and more strength than life on its own. See, what the teacher's telling us, we were not meant to do life alone. In fact, he goes so far as to say, life alone is a tragedy. So what are we created for? What were we meant for? I think this is, if I was to summarize what he's saying, I would say it this way. For survival and enjoyment, life is better together. For survival, we can't do it alone. We've already talked about that. But also for enjoyment, life is better together. I want to propose to you today. You've had a dream. I don't know what your dream has been, but you've had a dream for a long time. You're like, I just wish I could experience this. And maybe for you, it's like, I just want to go on that safari, that all-inclusive resort. I can't wait for that vacation. You just have a dream of doing that vacation. Maybe for you, your dream is that promotion. Maybe it's a certain amount of money. I don't know what your dream is. Maybe it's to win that one game at that one tournament or to win the championship. I don't know what your dream is, but I want you to consider your dream today. And I want you to imagine for a moment that you got it. And the elation and the excitement that come from experiencing or receiving the fruition of this dream that you've had all these weeks, all these months, maybe for you, it's all these years. You've finally been able to experience it. Now, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine something that I actually don't think you can do. I'm not sure that we're able to do this, but we're going to try. Now that you've received your dream, I want you to imagine that you can't share it with one single person. You can't take anyone with you on that vacation. You can't show anyone pictures. You can't tell them the experiences you've had. You can't share the excitement of what you just received with anyone. You have to do it completely alone. Doesn't that just kind of suck the joy out of the dream? See, our ability to experience joy is relative to our ability to share it with others. The depth to which we can experience enjoyment is somehow connected to how much we're able to share it with others. Because we were not created to be alone. We were created for community, for survival, and for enjoyment. It's why the man asked the question, why am I doing this? And I'm not even enjoying any of it. Like, I got my dream, but I can't even enjoy the full measure of the dream. I thought it was going to give me something, and it didn't. See, life was meant to be shared. And our ability to enjoy life is tied to our ability to share it with others. We're invited to do life together, not to see others as stepping stones, but to see others as those we do life with for survival and for enjoyment. And I would propose to you, we can't even do the Christian life alone. The New Testament has over 50 one another statements. You can't love one another, forgive one another, bear with one another, be kind and compassionate to one another. You can't practice hospitality to one another. You cannot live the Christian life alone. It requires community. So how do we make connections? I said earlier, I kind of gave this like, hey, we're kind of this guy. We've been living in an individualistic society. Many of us in this room are extremely lonely and lacking connection. So how do we move on from here? Because my guess is we're not going to tear out the garage doors tomorrow and build a porch, right? We're probably not going to make some drastic changes that suddenly going to change us. But are there some subtle things that would be anti or countercultural as we do life and grow in life together? I'm going to give two practical things I invite you to do. This isn't from the passage. This is from a leadership talk that Liz Bohannon did a couple of years ago, and I think it's brilliant as starting steps as we figure out how do we do life together. First one on making connections. If you're like, I need to start or restart. I just moved to town. I don't know how to make friends. Make the first move. I invite you to look at your calendar and consider how much is prioritized to people and how much is prioritized to that next project, the next thing to run to, the next hobby to chase down. How much is designated towards people? And you're going to have to make the first move by creating space and margin in your calendar for connection. It's not saying any of all those things are bad. Mandy and I love doing projects. One of the things we've done in our projects, because I know that I get very project focused, is we just have this little slogan we tell each other. Mostly she tells me because I need it a lot. People before projects. And we're in the middle of a project, like people before projects. Because at the end of the day, the people and relationships we have are more important than the projects we finish. So it's just this little phrase, catchphrase we tell each other. We want to make the first move. And I'm not good at this. And for some of you, making the first move, this is what's kept you from relationships and deep connection, is because although people bring the greatest joy in our life, people are also who create the most pain in our life. Isn't that true? And to make the first move is to open yourself up again to pain. If I enter a relationship and relationships are built on trust, I have been destroyed by trusting someone. Do I want to do that again? For you, your biggest barrier may be this. You're not sure you want to make the first move because it's dangerous. And it's going to cost you some time. All right, consider. Make the first move. The second thing Liz mentions is this. Pay your dues. Making deep friendships takes time. I don't know where she got these statistics from, but she says that to go from acquaintance to friend takes 90 hours. 90 hours of face-to-face time to go from acquaintance to friend. To go from friend to deep friend is another 110 hours. So that's 200 hours to go from acquaintance to friend. And some of you are like, where am I going to find 200 hours? I'm going to give you some good news today, okay? Statistics tell us that most people, adults, spend 700 hours on social media a year. Just saying, you got some time on your hands. You could probably put 200 of that. Another one, statistics tell us that adults spend around 2,700 hours in front of a television. I'm sure some of that's productive. I'm trying to think of the ones in my life. Anyways, I can't. But I'm sure some of it is productive. But maybe you could use 200 hours. To pay your dues. Now, here's the interesting thing. My guess is if you're young, it will go faster. My observation, this is just my observation, the older we get, the longer it takes to make deep friends. And so you may have to be at this for a little while. But here's the deal. It is worth it, worth it, worth it. Because like the man in Ecclesiastes found out, why am I toiling for all this stuff? And I'm going to tell you today, we have a lot of stuff. What am I working toward? I can't even enjoy it. What if we as Mount Olive Church, we as Kneehill County, began to see and realize that for survival and enjoyment, life is better together. We were created to share it together. And as a church, we became this place where people say, I want to be there because that's a place of connection. But I'll tell you what, this is so deeply ingrained in our culture and in us as people, in me specifically, it's going to take some time. But I invite you today to live into a new vision of life that the teacher invites us to live into. Not a vision of what can you accumulate only to lose it all in the end, because guess what? You're not going to live forever on this side of eternity. But why not invest in the people that God has given you? You were created for people, and he's made a way for you to have connection with others. I want to invite the worship team up. I'm going to pray. Why don't you stand with me, and we're going to sing in a little bit, but let's pray together first. Father, we just come before you. We thank you for the relationships that you have granted us. First and foremost, Father, you have made a way for us to have connection with you through your son, Jesus. But Father, as you created us and you gave us the opportunity to enjoy life, you created us as relational beings. Not only to say, well, I have a connection to my Father in heaven, but you've given us opportunity to have connection with your body, the church, your family, the church. And it's so good. But Father, it can be scary and it can be painful. And sometimes it can be inconvenient. And the selfish desires in me want to just keep doing my thing rather than give time and energy to others. Father, I pray that today we would learn wisdom from the teacher, that today we would see that life together indeed is better, and that we would make changes. Maybe they're subtle, maybe it's a significant change we need to make. Your Spirit's been speaking, but we would make the changes as you invite us to, as you've been convicting us to build our lives here in this world around the relationships that you've given, investing in those around us for the purpose of seeing people become devoted followers of Jesus, undoubtedly, but also as we do life together for our own survival and enjoyment. We ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.